Thank you, thank you. A treat to be here. The Utes are over there in the chapel. The Utes. Yeah, I said Utes, Bill. Well, welcome. So, is any of this making any sense yet? Good. Okay. Well, I could try to confuse you this afternoon, but I won't. We'll try to read some more records that speak about people receiving revelation in the scriptures. Let's start in Genesis chapter 40. We're all familiar with the record of Joseph minding his own business, raising sheep. Then one day he gets revelation that one day his parents and his brothers will bow down to him. And his brothers are so impressed, they think they'll kill him. But being good Middle Eastern businessmen, they say, why not make a few bucks? So they sold him to some slave traders, and off he goes to Egypt, at which point Joseph's thinking, I'm not sure I like this revelation business. Before God started talking to me, I was just raising sheep and living in my house, sleeping in my bed, having three meals a day. Now all of a sudden I'm going off to be water boy for some Egyptian I've never met. But he doesn't turn away from God. Sent off to prison, and he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly? Last night's baklava, or whatever, no, I guess that would have been Greek. Whatever you eat in Egypt. You didn't like the grape leaves I fed you? Why are you looking sad about it? Falafel wasn't good enough? The guy said it tasted okay, but now I falafel. Oh, never mind. Ooh. I should stop it. It's not fair to talk to you like this, but I'll. So wherefore, look. The chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me. And in the vine were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. It says, in 3 days you're going to get your old job back, and put in a good word for me when you get there. Tell him I was framed. For indeed, verse 15, I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said, I like this guy, he gives good news. Now, even before we go any further, the chief butler got this message, this revelation, this information from God through a dream, and he didn't know what it meant. Now, a lot of people go pretty goofy interpreting dreams. God can tell you through a dream. It's one of those things like visions and sending angels to you. It doesn't happen that often in the Bible. It's what we could often refer to as phenomena, something above and beyond what's promised. But God can communicate through dreams. But in this case, the dream, the meaning of it wasn't clear. So Joseph, by more what I call regular revelation, word of knowledge, word of wisdom, God told him what it meant, because how else would he know? And then he spoke it forth to the butler. But there's a verse in Ecclesiastes, if you keep your hand here, about dreams in general. Because a lot of people put a lot of stock in the meaning of dreams. And a lot of people study them, and psychiatrists specialize in them, and I am by no means an expert, but I do know what it says in Ecclesiastes 5:3. Ecclesiastes 5:3. For a dream cometh through the multitude of business or activity. a dream comes through the multitude of activity. In Ecclesiastes 5:3, many times we're so busy during the day, and if you don't settle your mind down, pray, get quiet with God, your mind just keeps working when you go to bed. And you'll find, if you think about it, many of the things you dream about are just whatever happened during the day in Looney Tune fashion. It just goes sort of bonkers. You know, whatever you were thinking through about during the day, if you don't settle down, get peaceful, pray. Whereas if you do settle down, get peaceful, pray, slow your mind down, look to God, you'll often have wonderful sleep with no dream. So if you're dreaming, it's not that you're possessed or God's telling you something. Most of the time, it's just your brain's too busy. Now, if God chooses to communicate with you, and there are people, you know, it was with Joe, wasn't it, with in a dream that God told Joseph to flee into Egypt? There are many cases where God does talk to people in dreams. But they are quite often either extreme situations or situations where the person doesn't have the Spirit of God. It's not the normal way God communicates, but he can when he chooses to. Again, just like, you know, having loud, you know, visions or, you know, angels descending from, you know, angels coming and talking to them or doves descending from heaven. These are sort of special occasions where God goes above and beyond. In most cases, God just communicates with word of knowledge and word of wisdom and discerning of spirits to people that have spirit form within. That's the more normal way. Like me, I normally, if somebody wants to contact me, they'll call me on the phone or send me an email, or if it's my kids, they'll send me a text message. But, you know, a Western Union guy, you know, running in with, you know, little brass buttons on and singing a song, that's sort of special. Or, you know, somebody sending a, you know, it doesn't happen anymore. My brother used to do that. He called Western Onion telegrams. He ran around New York City delivering singing telegrams. That's sort of a special occasion. You don't get those very often. You know, or getting some kind of special certified letter or something delivered by courier. It doesn't happen every day. But emails, texts, phone calls, they happen all the time, at least to me. Maybe you communicate differently. I don't know, carrier pigeons or something. But we have our normal ways of communications and then sort of the special ones. Well, dreams fit in the category generally of a special thing God can do, but not to be expected. And don't be thinking your dreams are revelation unless God makes it very clear what's going to happen, and then it happens. So getting back here to Ephesians, where are we? Genesis? I knew we were somewhere in the Bible. Genesis 40. So the butler figures, boy, that was a good message the baker got, the butler got. Let me ask this Hebrew guy what he thinks. So verse 16 of chapter 40, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, I had three white baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all manner baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. The guy's thinking, well, that wasn't as good an answer as the other guy got. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. People are like that. They forget things. So, verse 41, it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. So Joseph spent 2 more years in prison. I was talking to somebody today about how sometimes, you know, got to wait a little while to get to do stuff for God. Doesn't always happen as quickly as you want. Well, that's true. Joseph spent 2 more years in prison. Any rate, Pharaoh dreamed, verse 1, and behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine, or cattle, and fat-fleshed, and they fed in the meadow. So 7 healthy cows came up out of the river and ate grass. And behold, 7 other cattle came up after them out of the river, ill-favored, lean-fleshed, really scrawny, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed the second time. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 thin ears and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt. Sounds like what we read in Daniel. These kings at that time had whole departments of magicians. And all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream, and there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, Ah, I do remember my faults this day. 2 years later. Verse 10, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants. Remember that time I told you the joke about the 2 Hittites he didn't like? And I was giving you your drink in the evening, you threw me in the pokey? Well, anyway, I don't know why, but he did something the guy didn't like. Verse 10, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants, put me in ward and the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker, and we dreamed a dream in one night. I and he, we dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was there with us a young man, an Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams, to each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass as he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself. See, the Hebrews tended to wear beards, and the Egyptians were very clean-shaven. So before they took him in there, they cleaned him up. So they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. He shaved himself, changed his raiment, and came in unto Pharaoh. Verse 15, And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh and said, It's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So Joseph realized it wasn't just that he was so smart. He realized the information would have to come from God. And that's a great thing to realize. I can't emphasize that enough. That there are so many things in the Christian walk that come by revelation. If they come by revelation, you know. If they don't come by revelation, you don't know. And it takes great mental discipline to separate your opinions, your viewpoints, your experiences from revelation. Because as Doug shared last night, the written word, we can use it every day. We can speak in tongues every day. We can have the utterance manifestations of tongues with interpretation of prophecy every time we meet with believers. But revelation, that comes when God chooses to give it. Now, he may and does give it to us frequently, but it's not every second of every day. And you may ask God something and have to wait. I think I mentioned earlier today about the time when Jeremiah they came to ask Jeremiah, should they stay in Jerusalem or flee to Egypt? And the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah 10 days later. Now, Jeremiah could have decided, well, I'm spiritual, and I better give him an answer right now or they won't think I'm spiritual. Or he could have made something up, or he could have guessed based on the political condition and the travel report and the traffic conditions. But he didn't. He waited till God told him. And there are so many things in life that are available every day. Every day I can pray. Every day I can thank God for his loving kindness. Every day I can rejoice in his goodness and trust him and speak in tongues and walk in love. And when God tells me something, when I reach up into Daddy's cookie jar and there's something there, then I have revelation. But it takes mental discipline not to confuse the two. And you will run across believers that hear that, gee, you're good at, you sat through this camp and you learned about manifestations. So I'm going to run up and ask you some question. You're going to get revelation and tell me. Well, you might. But God might not choose to tell you about that situation for a lot of reasons that are up to him. And you don't have to feel bad or feel like you somehow missed it or you lost it or you're not spiritual. It's just honest to say, well, God didn't tell me about that. But I do know this verse and this verse and this verse, and I'll pray for you. And that's fine. It's very legitimate and very honest. And that's what people like Elijah and Jeremiah and a whole bunch of other wonderful men and women of God did at times. That's the honest approach. So here we are. What's going to happen? Verse 17, Pharaoh said unto Joseph, In my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river. Behold, there came up a river, seven kind, fat flesh, well-favored. They fed in the meadow. Seven other kind came up, poor, very ill-favored, lean flesh, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. They were so bad. Verse 20, And the lean and ill-favored kind did eat up the first seven fat kind. And when they'd eaten them up, it could not be known that they'd eaten them, for they were still ill-favored. As at the beginning, so I awoke. And I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in one stalk, full and good. And behold, seven ears, with withered, thin, and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it to me. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, The dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. And this is clearly by revelation. There is no other way Joseph would have known that the meaning of the dream is God telling Pharaoh what God is going to do. Verse 26, The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kind that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty years blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh, what God is about to do he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. Now look at this. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. This is one of the greatest keys in the scripture about revelation. When God says twice that something's going to occur, it's established. If he says it once, if the circumstances change, the revelation may change. We'll read one later today. Another great example that we won't read, but you can read it if you like, is in the book of Jonah. God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh, big city in Mesopotamia, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, and prophesy that in 3 days Nineveh will be destroyed. That was the word of the Lord. And had nothing changed, Nineveh would have been destroyed. It happened in Sodom, didn't it? Got destroyed. Well, they listened to what Jonah said. They repented of their evil. The king sat in sackcloth and ashes. So God changed his mind. And he did not destroy the city. So there, the revelation was sort of a wake-up call. And because he didn't say it twice, and because the circumstances changed, things changed. So think about for your life. You get revelation. God tells you something simple to do. You know, don't go into Shaver Lake. Go to Bear Creek. Go to Bear Creek. But if he says something like, you know, you're going to lose your job because the company's falling apart, start looking around. That may happen. But there's nothing wrong with you praying that that'll change. I've had that kind of thing happen to me dozens of times. God told me something bad was going to happen. I started praying, and perhaps it was because I started praying, but things changed, and it never came to pass that way. And it was very clear that God was telling me that based on the current circumstances, this is going to happen. But I prayed, I focused on things changing, and they changed. Other times, God told me something bad was going to happen. Sure enough, it happened, but I was ready for it. So I made other plans. And I was prepared for it. It didn't catch me by surprise and devastate me. Those will happen in our lives. But it's different if it's something clearly to do. If God tells you to do something, go do it. But if God tells you something is going to happen in the near future or in the far future, that is the way it will go unless circumstances change. So if it's something you don't want to have happen, there's nothing wrong with praying and asking God to fix it, or saying, what can I do to change it so this won't happen? That's perfectly okay. That's perfectly okay. So in other words, do what God tells you to do, but if he tells you about something else that's going to happen, not necessarily that you're going to do, but just something that's going to happen, nothing wrong with asking God and praying that it changes. And that's a radical, radical thing to see in the Word, but it's very clear. Sometimes revelation specific, particularly about things that are going to happen in the future, many times they're simply wake-up calls. And if people heed the wake-up call and change their thinking, change their actions, it won't happen that way. Well, here's one where it was established. God said it twice. There's nothing that was going to stop the 7 years of plenty, the 7 years of famine. So then the question is, okay, what do we do about it? Have parties for 7 years and then starve to death? Well, that doesn't make much sense, does it? That's what would have happened if they hadn't had the revelation and known it was coming. But if you know something's coming, you can now plan. So let's keep reading here. Let's keep reading. Verse 33. Now therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. So they were only supposed to keep 20% of the years of plenty, and that was going to be enough to take them through. Now, I would have thought, gee, that's not enough. I would keep half for each year, or 40%. But the revelation was keep 20%. I guess the 7 years were so incredibly plenteous that only saving a fifth each year would have been enough to get them through the 7 years of famine. And if you keep reading the whole record, when his brothers show up and everything, there is plenty of food. And, of course, you can read through. Joseph gets the job, and that's how Joseph becomes, in essence, the prime minister of Egypt. He's running the country. So when the famine starts, which is about, and gets into it, so about 10 years after this, after 7 years of plenty and a couple years of famine, his brothers show up trying to buy food. And guess who's the boss man? Their little brother that they sold into slavery. And that's a great record, but that's another story. We'll read that another time. But you see how God made it very clear. And it's interesting. God first established Joseph's credentials while he was in prison so that then Pharaoh would call on him. And not only did he save Egypt, he pretty much saved that whole region from starvation. And he was able to save the entire Christ line from dying in the famine by bringing them into Egypt and providing for them. It's all incredible. But so to summarize, those that didn't have the Spirit of God, the butler, the baker, and Pharaoh, they got revelation and dreams. Joseph, who had the Spirit of God upon him, he received word of knowledge, word of wisdom, which he could then interpret the dreams. He didn't really interpret them. He just gave the interpretation that God told him. And the fact that it was done twice established it. Jonah goes to Nineveh, says in 3 days the city's toast, they repent, it changes. God changed his mind. You can read about it. It's crystal clear. And there are many, many examples like that in the Word. Okay. It's 1 Kings chapter 14. Great stuff in the Scriptures. 1 Kings chapter 14. See, there are many, many things we can read in the Word, and then many, many things are simply you learning to walk with God. We can't read every single detail about these manifestations in the Word, but we can read an awful lot. 1 Corinthians 14 and... 1 Kings? Yep, that's what I meant. Yep, thank you very much. Okay, I could start printing out my notes and just handing you all a copy, and then you could tell me where to turn. I would probably do better. 1 Corinthians 14... Did I say Corinthians?
Yes. Yep.
It's established. It's established that I don't know what the heck I'm doing up here. My kids could have told you that, but that's okay. 1 Kings 14. Wow. What's going on here? Oh, yeah. Well, what's going on is Okay, verse 1. 1 Kings 14, verse 1. At that time, Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, fell sick. And Jeroboam, who was not a very godly king, to say the least, he said to his wife, "Arise, I pray thee, and disguise thyself, that thou be not known to be the wife of Jeroboam. And get thee to Shiloh. Behold, there is Ahijah the prophet, which told me that I should be king over this people. And take with thee 10 loaves and cracknels and a cruse of honey, and go to him. He shall tell thee what shall become of the child." And Jeroboam's wife did so, and arose and went to Shiloh, and came to the house of Ahijah. But Ahijah could not see, for his eyes were set by reason of his age. He was very old and blind. And the Lord said unto Ahijah, "Behold, the wife of Jeroboam cometh to ask a thing of thee for her son, for he is sick. Thus and thus shalt thou say unto her, for it shall be when she cometh in that she shall feign or pretend herself to be another woman." So even though he was blind, God told him what was going to happen and what to say. So he wouldn't be surprised, he wouldn't be fooled, and he'd know what to say. And it was so, verse 6, when Ahijah heard the sound of her feet as she came in at the door, that he said, "Come in, thou wife of Jeroboam, why feignest thou self to be another? For I am sent to thee with heavy tidings." And he goes on and tells her that your son's going to die. You wasted a trip. And it's rather sad. But Ahijah the prophet had the information he needed. And you'll find that God will give you the information you need to do what you're doing, whatever it is. He needed to know what was going on so he could do his job as the prophet. And God told him. And God will do that for you as well. 2 Corinthians 3. Now here is a very interesting record. Thank you. Am I still saying Corinthians?
Yes.
Well, I don't know what I'm talking about. Let me see. I've been here 3 days. Can't really quite blame it on jet lag. Altitude. That's it. That's altitude. 2 Kings chapter 3. Oh, I know. I didn't get much of a horizontal. That's it. That's right. 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. It came to pass. 2 Kings 3, 5. It came to pass when Ahab was dead that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. So Ahab, a rather prominent king, died. And apparently Moab, a neighboring country, was under tribute to them and had to pay them money. And as soon as Ahab died, Moab rebelled and said, "Fooey on you, I don't want to pay you money." So King Jehoram, the new king, went out of Samaria, the capital of Israel, the same time and numbered all Israel. He got the troops lined up to go whip Moab back into shape. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, "The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle?" And you got to realize, Jehoshaphat, most of the time, was a wonderful believer. He had his problems, like a lot of people, but most of the time he was just a great believer. Whereas the kings of Israel, Ahab and others, were tremendous unbelievers. So here Jehoram, the king of Israel, calls on Jehoshaphat and says, "Will you go with me to whip these Moabites into shape?" And he, Jehoshaphat, said, "I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and my horses as thy horses." And he said, verse 8, "Which way shall we go?" And he answered, "The way through the wilderness of Edom." So the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. So they had 3 armies to go beat up 1 army. The numbers were in their favor, but the problem was there was no water. It was going through a dry and parched land. Verse 10, "And the king of Israel, the unbeliever, said, 'Alas, that the Lord hath called these 3 kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. We're out here, we'll have no water, we'll be weak, we'll lose. Oh, woe is me.'" But Jehoshaphat, the believer, the king of Judah, said, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him?" We'll just ask God what to do. So they had to find somebody with the Spirit of God on them. It wasn't like today where we're all born again. They had to find somebody with the Spirit of God. And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, "Here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah." He had been Elijah's servant. And then when Elijah went up with the chariots of fire, da-da-da-da-dum-dum, then Elisha took over. It's true. I'm not sure about the soundtrack, but he did go up with chariots of fire. And Jehoshaphat said, "The word of the Lord is with him." So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha, the prophet, said unto the king of Israel, the son of Ahab, the great unbeliever, "What have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father. Go talk to Balaam and Ashtoreth and all your false gods you've talked to. They think they know what's going on. You've been serving them. Ask them what they think. Get thee to the prophets of thy father, to the prophets of thy mother." And the king of Israel said unto him, "No, no, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." No, 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 God wants us to go up there and die. This guy was weird. Not only did he worship false gods, he thought the true God wanted them all to die in the wilderness. It's a good thing he brought Jehoshaphat along, huh? And Elisha, the prophet, said, "As the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee." If Jehoshaphat wasn't here, I wouldn't even pay any attention to you, you bum. He made it very clear he had no interest in this unbelieving king of Israel, but he would put up with him because of Jehoshaphat, who was a believer, who had, for most of his reign, walked with God and served the Lord. Verse 15, now look at this, but now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. This reminds me of that record of Saul. He was troubled by an evil spirit, and he brought David in to play the harp, and then the evil spirit departed from him. The point is, he needed to get quiet. He needed to do what we would call in this administration, get back in fellowship with God, get his mind focused on trusting God, and put things away. He was so worked up about seeing the king of Israel there that he just wasn't peaceful enough to listen to God and do his job as a prophet. So he said, "Bring in some music, and it'll settle me down." And there's a great key there, because sometimes in situations you do get so worked up emotionally or so stressed out, you can't listen to God. So do whatever it takes to get peaceful. Like I said, the thing I love to do is get up in the morning when nothing else is going on, hopefully before anybody's in the family is awake except the dog, and as soon as she goes out, she leaves me alone. And I just get quiet. And that, for me, really works. To pray, read the word, and focus. For you, it may be sitting listening to music. It may be taking a walk. It may be doing something else that just calms you down. But whatever it is that calms you down, we'll read records throughout the week where prophets pace back and forth, where they did different things, where they had to put everybody else out of the room so they weren't a distraction, so they could focus on ministering to the person that needed help. Whatever it takes to get you settled down to where you can listen to God, that's what you do. For Elisha, he said, "Bring me a minstrel." He couldn't turn on his iPod. You know, he couldn't get in his car and crank up the AC and turn on the radio and get his favorite station. Long before XM satellite radio. But what he could do is he could say, "Bring me a minstrel." And he did that, and it settled them down. Let's look at that verse again. Verse 15. "But now bring me a minstrel." And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, "Thus saith the Lord." So he had to quiet down. The hand of the Lord came upon him, which simply means that not only did he have the Spirit of God, but he'd gotten himself to the place where he was able to listen. And he said, "Thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain, yet that valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts." And you can read the rest of the record. God fills the ditches with water. They drink. They win the battle. Hooray! But it took Elisha getting settled down to where he could listen to God. Then it happened. And even somebody as spiritual as Elisha took the time to settle down. The only person I've ever read about who didn't seem to have these, well, even Jesus Christ went out early in the morning and prayed. Now, when he was out there ministering, he seemed to be able to go nonstop and always be walking, but even he reached his limits where he had to get out and pray. He had to get out and get quiet. He had to get away from the crowd to get peaceful with God. And he was, of course, a remarkable fellow, to say the least. 2 Kings chapter 4. You guys don't mind if I keep going through dinner. Just kidding. I know my limits. See, we have plenty of time till dinner. 2 Kings chapter 4. See, I got Kings this time. I'm getting there. Second Kings chapter 4, verse 1. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophet unto Elisha, saying, Thy servant, my husband, is dead. And thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord, and the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen, to be slaves. They had tough economic conditions. You couldn't pay your bills. They sold your kids into slavery. The bankruptcy laws are really more lenient today, I think. Don't you? They were pretty tough back then. So here she's saying, hey, my husband just died. I got bills. They want to sell my sons into slavery. Help. What are we going to do about this? Verse 2, and Elisha said unto her, What shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? And she said, Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. I got a bunch of dents and a bottle of Crisco. Then he said, verse 3, Go, borrow these vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few. Now this pretty much had to be revelation. This isn't the kind of thing you just make up. Because I've emptied bottles of oil in my kitchen and had to actually go to the grocery store and buy another bottle. Has that happened to you? But here, it had to be revelation. Thou shalt set aside that way. Okay. Verse 4. And when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and thou shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons who brought the vessels to her. And she poured out, and it came to pass when the vessels were full that she said unto her son, Bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. So as long as there was an empty pot to pour into, the water poured out. There were no more pots or bottles or jugs to pour into. There was no more to pour. Then she said, came and told the man of God, and he said, Go, sell the oil, pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. So enough to pay off the debts and still have money to live on. Isn't that great? Now, it doesn't say exactly how God told Elisha, but it's clear it was word of knowledge, word of wisdom. The woman who didn't have the Spirit of God went to the man of God who did have the Spirit of God. God told him. He told her. She believed it and did it, and she was taken care of. Further down in the chapter, there's a woman, a Shunammite woman. When Elisha travels through Shunam, she always would invite him to stay there. They eventually realized this was a man of God. She went to her husband and said, Let's build him a room to stay in. They built him a room on the wall of the house. Whenever he went through Shunem, he stayed with him. He said, She's been so kind to me. What's she need? They figured out she didn't have a son. So, by the power of God, she got pregnant, even though she never had before. She had a son, and then when the son got older, the son died. And she was very shook and upset and went to see the man of God. Look at verse 18. And when the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father's to the reapers. And he said unto his father, My head, my head. And he said to a lad, Carry him to his mother. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat her on her knees till noon and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. And she called unto her husband and said, Send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. And he, the husband, said, Wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It's neither new moon nor Sabbath. What are you doing going to church? It's not Sunday or Christmas or Easter. I don't get it. He was just a nice guy, but she was the one who believed God. And he didn't understand her going off to see the preacher on, if it wasn't some church day. Why are you going to do that? But, and she just said, it shall be well. She just said, fine, it's okay. She didn't even deal with him. She didn't want to deal with him. She wanted to go straight to the man of God. Verse 24, then she saddled an ass and said unto her servant, Drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. So she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to Gehazi, his servant, Behold, yonder is that Shunammite. Run now, I pray, to meet her and say unto her, Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child? And she answered, It's well. She didn't even want to deal with the servant. She just said, It's fine. She just kept going, wanted to see the man of God. Verse 27, And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet, but Gehazi came near to thrust her away, and the man of God said, Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me and hath not told me. See, so there are times like Ahijah where God told him ahead of time that the wife of Jeroboam was coming. Here the woman's right literally at his feet, and God's not telling him what's going on. He's God. I can't explain why he does these things and why he doesn't, but he always supplies what's needed. And you'll see that in this record. He doesn't tell him now, but he does eventually. Verse 28, Then she said, Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, Do not deceive me? Then he realized what was going on. Verse 29, He said to Gehazi, Gird up thy loins, take my staff in thine hand, and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not. And if any salute thee, answer him not again, and lay my staff upon the face of the child. And the mother of the child said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them, and laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him, and told him, saying, The child is not awaked. And when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead, and laid upon his bed. He went in therefore and shut the door upon them twain and prayed unto the Lord. You see, he started by praying, and I know we'll get into this more when we get into the manifestations of faith, miracles, and healings. But Jesus Christ, as I said, walked with God in a way nobody ever has. But if you look at other people, and he just seemed to walk that he knew every minute. But if you look at other people like Elisha and Paul and Peter, and I'll tell you, I wouldn't put myself in the same shoes as Elisha or Paul, but I think I'd put myself closer to them than to Jesus Christ. And if they had to take some time to pray to get themselves together, well, I'll be in that boat. I'm not quite at the place where I can be like Jesus Christ, where I can go all day and not miss a beat. Get up at 4 a.m., pray for an hour, and I'm ready to go 16 hours nonstop. Yeah, healing, ministering, everything. Elisha needed a little time. He kicked everybody else out of the room, and he prayed. Just like he did earlier in the chapter when he needed a minstrel to get him ready to get revelation. So he kicks everybody out of the room. Verse 33, He went in therefore, shut the door upon them twain, and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child, and put his mouth upon his mouth, eyes upon his eyes, hands upon his hands. Again, this is something you would generally do by revelation. There's no sense knowledge-wise reason to lie down upon a dead body. Doesn't make any sense. But in the context, he was praying, it seems to be it was the revelation. His hands upon his hands, he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child, what? Waxed warm. Started to revive a little bit. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro. He needed more time. He walked back and forth. It doesn't say how long. Could have been 2 minutes, could have been 2 hours, could have been 5 hours. But he walked back and forth. Again, it doesn't say, but based on the context, what makes sense is that he was praying either to get his head ready to receive revelation or waiting until God was ready to tell him, but he kept praying. So two things you see here. One, God didn't tell him immediately, either because he wasn't ready to hear or there was some other reason God didn't tell him immediately. And two, he didn't give up. He still kept praying. He still stuck with it. He returned, walked to and in the house to and fro, went up, stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, "Call this Shunammite." So he called her, and when she was come in unto him, he said, "Take up thy son." And she did. Took up her son and went out. So you can learn a lot about revelation in these places. Even a man as great as Elisha needed to have a minstrel to settle him down in one record. Another record needed to pray and walk back and forth to get to that place where he could receive revelation. It's interesting. And there are other places where the revelation didn't come and there was not deliverance, because there were other circumstances beyond everybody's control. We're not God. We just walk forth ministering and walking with God the best we can. And the more we understand of the word and the more we walk with God, the more effective we'll be. But there are a lot of factors involved in something like healing. And again, I'm getting ahead of myself. There's the believing of, well, I'll just wait. But the main thing I wanted to see here was the revelation. We'll get into other stuff as the week goes on. 2 Kings chapter 5. Boy, I'm on Kings. That's 3 times in a row. I can't believe it. 2 Kings chapter 5. Well, actually, I'm not going to read this. This is the record where Naaman the leper comes down, and he goes to the man of God and wants to know how to get healed of his leprosy. And the man of God doesn't even go out to talk to him. He just says, "Go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Sends a messenger out. And there's Naaman, this big hotshot from this big foreign government. Big procession, camels, whoop-de-doo. You know, to be like me, I live near Washington, D.C., where there's big motorcades. Big, like one of those motorcades with 16 Secret Service SUVs pulled up in front of my house. And I sent Sam out to say, "Go wash in the Occoquan River 7 times. And I didn't even go out. I go, "Wait a minute, I sent diplomats and everything. And you sent a kid out to tell me to go what, jump in the river?" Naaman didn't like the idea. But his staff finally said, "Look, boss, if he told you to do some big whoop-de-doo thing and blown off fireworks and thrown holy water at you, you would listen. Why can't you just go jump in the river?" So he jumps in the river 7 times. He comes out healed. But there's a case where Elisha did get the revelation. He just sent the message out, and that's all there was to it. That's all he did. Now let's read one in 1 Kings chapter 20. This is another one where the revelation changes. One of the most vivid occurrences of revelation changing. 1 Kings chapter 20. First Kings 20 and verse 1. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, gathered all his host. 2 Kings chapter 20. I really thought I had it that time. That Ben-Hadad record is really pretty cool. I think we read it. Did we read that earlier today? About the chariots of fire? Yeah, we did. It's the first time we had the soundtrack. Yep. Okay, 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 1. In those days was Hezekiah. And Hezekiah was another king who was a wonderful believer, like Jehoshaphat, a guy that really walked with God most of his reign. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, "Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live." Boy, that's a cheery message from the preacher. Well, that's what he said. And that was the revelation. And had circumstances not changed, that's what would have happened. But look what Hezekiah did. Verse 2, then he turned his face to the wall and prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, afore Isaiah was gone out into the middle court, that the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, Turn again, and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears, behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up unto the house of the Lord. And then he goes on and says, Well, show me a sign. And God says, Well, you can have the sundial go forward 10 degrees or back 10 degrees. He says, Well, it's always going forward. Why don't have it go back 10 degrees? So God moved the sundial back 10 degrees. Now, I don't know how many of you know much about astronomy, but moving a sundial back 10 degrees, something up there is really moving. Either the entire solar system is switching around, or the Earth is moving, or the sun's moving, but that's no small feat. But somehow God did it. But then again, he did make the heavens and the earth. So he can do that kind of stuff. And how he did it without Neptune, you know, just falling out of orbit and stuff, I have no idea, but he's God. But the great thing I want you to see here is the revelation was that Hezekiah would die. But when he prayed, God gave him 15 more years. And he didn't die. Incredible record. One more to finish in Daniel chapter 2. So revelation given once may change. Revelation given twice is established. And by the way, that would be a great study project. I've actually started on something similar with a few folks out on the East Coast who want to get into this, to just go through the Bible and find out every time where the prophet or somebody with the Spirit of God says something's going to happen, and find out how many happen exactly as stated, and how many change because the circumstances change. Great study. A little beyond what we can do in a camp. But keep your eye out on that. And if you see any interesting examples, please email them to me. Because I would really like to see if we can document that more clearly. And see if that principle actually fits everywhere. It's fit everywhere I've seen. But I always like to keep looking in the Word and make sure what we're saying fits. So Daniel chapter 2. You're probably all there. Daniel's great. I could never confuse that with Corinthians. Well, I guess I should never say never, huh? Okay, Daniel 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, this is after the Babylonian, or during the period of the Babylonian captivity, at the beginning of it, Daniel and his friends have been taken captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. Second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and the sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians. There you go again. The astrologers, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. See, this time he didn't even remember the dream. He just remembered he'd had a dream and was upset. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, or Aramaic, O king, live forever, tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, The thing is gone from me, I forgot it. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Talk about a tough job evaluation. I'm going to make you earn your pay, guys. You're the hooky-pook artists, you're the magicians, astrologers, you tell me what was in the dream and what it means. And they're saying, that's not in my job description. I was not trained in how to do that. I don't know this. Our contract doesn't include that. The king said, I don't care. I'll still cut you in pieces. Verse 6, but if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we'll show the interpretation of it. It's easy. You tell us the dream, we'll come up with some highfalutin explanation. But you got to tell us what the dream was. King answered and said, I know of a certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can Show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things that any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. It's just not the way the game is played, boss. We don't do it this way. Verse 11, And it's a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Because they worked in the wise man astrologer department. Anything sort of religious, they put all in the same department. And they'd shown that they could walk with God, so they were working in that department. They're going to wipe out the whole department. Verse 14, Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, Why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Now look at this. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So basically, he gets together with his buddies. They have their hour power group. They get together and they pray that God will show them what it means. Now you can ask all sorts of questions. Why didn't God tell Daniel ahead of time and avoid all this ruckus? I don't know. Maybe God was trying to show a difference to the king of Babylon between the astrologers and what Daniel could do with the Spirit of God. You can second guess all kinds of things. And that's another great key. When something goes wrong, you can second guess, why did things go wrong? Or you can start asking God for help. Daniel could have said, well, gee, the fact that the captain of the guard came in here to kill me means A, God doesn't care about me, B, I'm a lousy believer, C, I forgot how to receive revelation. You could get all kinds of ways to get condemned. But instead, he focused on the need, which was to find out what the dream was, and they asked God to show him. Same thing happens in our lives. Something goes not quite the way you want it. You can spend a lot of time figuring out who to beat up and who to blame and who to yell at and who to get condemned, but that doesn't do any good. The minute you stop all that and start saying, God, can you help me with this? That's when God can bring deliverance. That's when God can tell you what to do. That's when you can start to get results. Even the Shunammite lady with her dead son. Elisha could have said, well, gee, if I'd walked with God more and told her what to do, maybe he wouldn't have died. Okay, maybe so, but he died. He's dead. The question is, what are we going to do now? Well, Daniel's in the same boat. They're running around killing all the wise men of Babylon, and he's about to get killed. So rather than worry about everything that went wrong that got him to that point, the question now is, God, will you tell me what the frickin' dream was and what it means so he doesn't chop my head off? And that's what they pray for. And that's what they pray for. So, they got together, verse 18, that they would desire mercies of God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Verse 19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Why did he have to wait till night? Why didn't God tell him right then? Why didn't he use word of knowledge, word of wisdom? I don't know. But the point is, God got the information to Daniel that he needed. In this case, it came in a night vision. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. He changes the times and the seasons, removeth kings, setteth up kings, giveth wisdom to the wise, knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hath given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore, verse 24, Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. And you can read the rest of it. He tells him what it means. Daniel gets a big old promotion and all kinds of fancy gifts, and things are great. But the thing is, Daniel went and asked God what it means. They prayed, God showed him, and they were delivered. And it's just a great way to live. We have the Spirit of God. God will get us what we need. Sometimes it'll be by us just praying and God giving us things. Other times he'll tell us things we can do. But God will always be faithful to take care of us. And now, by the grace of God, we have supper. So it's been great being with you, and we'll head on to supper. Anything else, Doug?